Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, November 21st, 2006 Carborough Board of Aldermen meeting. We begin our regular business meetings with requests and petitions from visitors and speakers from the floor, and we have one tonight. Is Ms. Josephine Harris ready to come on up, please?
Good evening, Mayor Chilton and Board of Aldermen members. My name is Josephine Harris, and I am the Town of Carborough's representative to the Orange County Human Relations Committee. I come before you this evening just to introduce myself and to let you know that the Human Relations Commission continues to offer advisory assistance to the Board of County Commissioners regarding bias and discriminatory practices and social justice issues here in Orange County. You've been given information, and I have copies if you don't have that at hand, that explains the powers and the duties of the Human Relations Commission and the charge that the county commissioners have given to this commission. In my role as the Town of Carborough representative on the HRC, I plan to bring to you quarterly reports regarding the work of the Human Relations Commission. Mr. James Spivey, who is the Program Development and Civil Rights Specialist of the Orange County Rights and Relations Department, is also here tonight. If you don't have questions presently, I do bid you good evening, and I hope to see you over the next several months as I update and keep you updated about the Human Relations Committee activities. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Pastor Harris. If there are no questions regarding that, then let's proceed to the consent agenda, Mr. Manager.
Okay. Item 1 is approval of minutes of the previous meetings. Item 2 is a request to set joint planning public hearings and assembly of governments meeting dates for 2007. Item 3 is a resolution reassigning advisory board terms. Item 4 is a resolution endorsing the North Carolina League of Municipalities Strategic Directions Initiative. Item 5 is a request to waive request for proposals and to award a contract for engineering services for the Brewer Lane Enhancement Project Phase 1 Environmental Site Assessment. Item 6 is a request to approve a revised capital budget policy and to approve a budget amendment. Item 7 is a resolution approving amendments to Owassa's Sewer Use Ordinance. Item 8 is a request to reset the public hearing on the conditional use permit request for elementary school number 10 to January 9th, 2007. And item 9 is a resolution in support of the North Carolina Department of Transportation bicycle planning grant application.
What are the items?
I just have a moment. For number 4, not that I oppose it, and you know, I don't fall under the traditional recusal for number 4. Just a point of information so people know, I'm the lobbying compliance director for the state of North Carolina, and so we regulate the lobbyists, which the league has, and so I kind of wanted people to know that. I'm not going to recuse myself from the vote, but I want people to know.
Full disclosure, huh?
Full disclosure.
Excellent. Okay, the entire consent agenda has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously.
Just about number 2, do we know who's going to, which government is supposed to provide, I guess, the agenda for the next Assembly of Governments meeting? Do you know what they're for? Can you, you know, you mayors and chairs get together. Could you
find that out
and maybe hint that maybe a kind of a economic development discussion might be helpful and instructive.
Okay. We'll do. I think it's Orange County next, but I will.
I thought they were the last time.
I thought that was Chapel Hill last time.
Oh, okay.
I think it was Chapel Hill the last time.
All right. So it's just, you know, a little bit there.
Well, I will get that out there. Thank you for raising that. We're on to our regular action items. I would like to, is there a representative from the Spring Valley neighborhood here?
I couldn't help myself.
That's a
Okay.
Somebody's coming.
Somebody is coming. Okay, right. Well, I would like to suggest that we take our agenda slightly out of order and jump forward to the item relating to Roberson Place traffic calming, since there are quite a few people here this evening to speak on that item, and then we'll proceed with the rest of our agenda.
Okay.
If that's acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Good idea.
Mr. Manager, is your staff here? You're prepared to do that?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. The traffic calming request from Roberson Place neighborhood. Residents of Roberson Place neighborhood have submitted a petition under the town's residential traffic management plan. Town staff has collected data and evaluated traffic conditions in order to make a recommendation on the neighborhood's request. A resolution has been prepared for the board's adoption, and Dale McKeel, our transportation planner, does have a presentation. Dale?
Good evening. I have a somewhat lengthy presentation this time, but I will try to run through it as quickly as I can. I think everyone knows the location of Roberson Place neighborhood, but just to orient, this is the general location of the neighborhood. This yellow line is the bike path, which is now close to being complete. South Greensboro Street is over to the west, and this is the Rogers Tri-Am property to the south of the neighborhood. I want to briefly go through sort of a sequence of events that kind of brought us to where we are tonight with the approval of this neighborhood, as well as some of the other related items. Back in 1994, 1996, there was an effort to review the neighborhood street design standards in Carrboro. This effort, in part, was done. Well, I think it was done primarily to accommodate the design of the Roberson Place neighborhood through some narrower street standards, narrower right-of-way standards that were being requested by the developer, and a part of that request was for narrower streets that would have a reduction on traffic speeds. From November 1995 to January of 1996, there was public hearings held on what was then called the Old Mill Village conditional use permit. The public hearing was carried over for, I believe, four meetings, and the primary reason that it was carried over was to discuss this connection. January 1996, the CUP was approved with the connection as a required element. The description of the connection from the 96 CUP, it stated that the connection would provide egress for all vehicles. This was a compromise between emergency access only and a full two-way access point. It would allow ingress and egress for emergency services and bicycles. It explicitly stated that when the Rogers Tri-Am site is redeveloped, the public street connection is expected. And what was contemplated this time was that the developer of the Roberson Place neighborhood would work out an agreement with the Rogers Tri-Am property owner on an easement that would allow this connection to be made. Well, the discussion of that easement took place for several years, and the two parties were never able to come to terms. In November of 1999, the board authorized the use of eminent domain to obtain the necessary right-of-way to make this connection. In January of 2000, there was a minor modification to the conditional use permit, which allowed construction of phase four of the development, even though the connector had not been provided. The developer also at that time set aside $28,000 for the construction of the connector. January 13, 2005, the acquisition of the right-of-way had been completed. August of 2006, the board approved a budget ordinance of $9,000, completing the right-of-way purchase. Overall, the expenditures on the connection for the right-of-way, it was $25,000 total. Engineering design close to $10,000 has been spent. There also have been costs for an appraisal of the right-of-way, numerous hours of staff time, and as well as of our legal counsel. There have also been previous traffic calming requests from this neighborhood. They submitted a request in 2002, and in 2003 there were several items approved. The speed limit was lowered from 25 to 20. On-street parking was allowed on the sort of southern section of Sweet Bay Place, south of Wanamaker, and additional speed limit signs were placed on the upper portion of Sweet Bay. And in, this is just some pictures I had from back in those. That time we were we got the fire trucks and the garbage trucks out just to look at the whether they'd be able to make it through with the on-street parking where it was proposed. And that, as I said, that was approved. They also wanted to mention that, as is the town's policy, there has been a sign placed at the end of Purple Leaf Place saying the road may be extended in the future. The connection has been designed taking into account the conditional use permit condition that I discussed previously. There's a 10-foot choker section with tapers and object markers, and that's intended to slow down traffic by providing that that choker effect. The connection is viewed as an interim measure. If the Rogers Triumph property is redeveloped, the land use ordinance would require improved facilities for use of bicyclists and pedestrians. The design has been completed, and the project has been put out to bid. The bids were actually opened last week. This is sort of an aerial photograph showing the area of the connection. This is Purple Leaf Place up here. That's part of the Roberson Place neighborhood. This is the existing Rand Road coming through here, and this is the area where the additional right-of-way had to be acquired, and this is the proposed connection that would be constructed. The sort of constricted area, 10 foot, is right there. Also have some engineering drawings, which may be somewhat difficult to read, but those are that's the existing pavement on the Rand Road side, Purple Leaf Place. The connector is through this area. This is the constricted area that I mentioned before. And then this is a sort of a close-up of that constricted area. And that's, so as you can see, it does narrow down from about 20 feet at the Purple Leaf Place to 10-foot section. There are object markers here to define that connection. There also is a concrete apron. The curb and gutter ends here. There's an existing sidewalk in this location. There's a concrete apron on both sides of this pavement to help with the drainage. And there also, in response to some of the comments that we've heard, we have looked at the feasibility of providing some sort of a pedestrian connection through this area where the road has been narrowed, and we believe it would be feasible to put a sort of a gravel path through that area. There also have been we've received questions about what sort of signage would be provided at the connection. Again, this is something that's still under review, but we would anticipate that on the Rand Road side, as you were sort of looking to the north toward the neighborhood, there would be a do not enter except bicycle signs. There would be, if you were coming down Purple Leaf Place toward Rogers Triumph, we would consider a stop sign there to just enforce to the motorists that are exiting the neighborhood that they need to stop and look for bicyclists who may be coming up. Also would have the standard North Carolina DOT share the road signs, and possibly a sign that would say one-way traffic yield to bicycles as you approach the connector. The neighborhood petition was submitted in April of this year. The petition had 3 points, that the future connection between Purple Leaf Place and Rand Road permit ingress and egress of emergency vehicles only, that temporary barrier be erected, which can only be removed by emergency vehicle personnel, and that sidewalks and bikeways be installed adjacent to the road to allow pedestrian and bicycle traffic to travel from Greensboro Street to Roberson Place. Town staff did meet with representatives of the Homeowners Association and defined an area of influence, and it's this area in purple here, which did include properties sort of outside the neighborhood in this area and down in this area. And they did meet the 75% threshold by, they had signatures from 64 out of 79 residents and property owners, so it was 81%. At the TAB meeting, there was also a request for additional analysis of whether the neighborhood qualified for traffic calming measures. These are speed counts and volume counts that were done. As you're going on the hill, sort of heading into the neighborhood, the volumes were highest, around 650 vehicles per day. The 85th percentile speed was in the upper 20s. As you sort of progress through the neighborhood, the volumes and the speeds tended to decrease some. This is the hill sort of leading down into the neighborhood, and this is the area where the 85th percentile speed and the 27-28 mile an hour range was recorded.
Could you go back to the that table that you had?
Mm-hmm.
What accounts for the almost 200 car decrease?
Between
Fleet Bay, hill north of the neighborhood, and 100 feet north, I mean...
South of Wanamaker.
South of Wanamaker.
Let's what? See if I can go back. Well, the first recorded area was, I think, right in this area, and the second was down okay. here. So a lot of people would have been accessing
right.
these townhomes
right.
in this area,
okay.
as well as just the, you know, the other houses here.
Okay.
And down on Purple Leaf Place, you can see the volumes were pretty low at this point. Using the criteria worksheet that's in the Residential Traffic Management Plan, added up the various points, and they this neighborhood or the Fleet Bay Place in particular received 32 points using these criteria. I would just point out that the speed limit, the 28 mile an hour 85th percentile speed, is very similar to what we recorded in the neighborhood when the speed limit was 25. So I'm not sure that reducing the speed limit to 20 miles an hour has had a great impact on speeds. That's something of an aside, but
yeah.
I did want to mention it.
Is there a difference on speed going in or out, up or down?
Surprisingly enough, there's not. It was almost identical.
Okay.
The town staff recommendation is that the connection be constructed as it was specified in the conditional use permit. Once opened, town staff will closely monitor traffic volumes and speeds in Roberson Place. It is anticipated that a narrow and circuitous street network will discourage cut-through traffic and that many of the residents of Roberson Place will benefit from having an alternative means of exiting the subdivision. And also, it seems that the connection is in line with other policies that have been adopted on street connectivity, such as the one here in the land use ordinance. Town staff does not support the placement of barriers that can only be removed by emergency vehicle personnel. However, some type of flexible barrier may be acceptable. Constructing sidewalks and bikeways adjacent to Rand Road at this point would be difficult, but just because it's a narrow right-of-way, and we would need some drainage easements in order to properly drain a street and sidewalk system. However, as I mentioned before, if the property is redeveloped, the ordinance would require improved pedestrian and bicycle facilities. As far as traffic calming, the neighborhood would qualify for the stage two traffic calming measures, which would be speed tables, speed humps, those, you know, types of physical devices. However, at least under the current circumstances, where most of the neighborhood traffic is residents of the neighborhood, the staff recommendation is that first an education and enforcement program be tried for a period of 3 to 6 months before moving into other types of physical measures. A little bit of information about crash data between January 1st, 2000 and September 22nd this year. There have been two crashes in the neighborhood. One was a vehicle that was backing into a driveway and struck a vehicle that was parked on the street. The other crash occurred at the intersection of Wanamaker and Sweet Bay, and a car was pulling out of Wanamaker, and there were some cars illegally parked in no parking zone on Sweet Bay, which did obstruct the view. That was in the police report. Safety considerations regarding the connector. In any development, two means of egress is important, and it's especially important in the event of a disaster where evacuation of the neighborhood may be required, because if there were emergency vehicles blocking one exit, it's important to have another way to get out. Want to go over a little bit of the rationale for the staff recommendation. This is a larger area of this part of Carrboro. There's the Arts Center located on Main Street. Just want to point out that, you know, I know there's concern from the neighborhood about a lot of cut-through traffic. Just want to sort of go through sort of the thought process that someone might use if they were at the Arts Center. Probably the easiest way to get down to South Greensboro Street would be to take a right and go around Merritt Mill Road, the same with someone coming from downtown Chapel Hill. Likewise, if someone's coming from the north on Greensboro Street or Main Street, they're likely to go down Greensboro and not cut over Roberson and come through this neighborhood. And also during the peak traffic periods, there is a no left turn at this intersection for cars that are headed west, so you're not allowed to turn onto Roberson in order to come down this way. And I doubt very few people would come down here and then come back to make that cut through. Also wanted to just mention that I mentioned the convenience factor for the residents who live in the neighborhood. If someone lived here near the end of Purple Leaf Place, wanted to exit out to through Rand Road to South Greensboro, it's about an eighth of a mile trip. If they had to go all the way through the neighborhood, it's a mile trip. It's also interesting to look at sort of the dynamics of different streets and the relative attractiveness. We have Weaver Street here, 7,800 vehicles per day. Poplar, Parallel Street, at least if you're going east, it might be a shorter trip, but we have about 10% of the vehicles on Poplar that are on Weaver. And the same thing with Greensboro Street, 14,000 vehicles per day. Parallel Street, Oak Avenue, 906 vehicles per day. So just because there's a parallel facility doesn't mean that it's going to carry the same level of traffic as an arterial, because of these other factors that tend to discourage cut-through traffic. The TAB reviewed this item, and they recommend the Board of Aldermen support the staff recommendation and also recommend that traffic counts in the neighborhood be monitored regularly. And that's the end of my presentation. There were some questions earlier that came up about the Rogers Triumph site and some environmental concerns. If there are some questions about that, I'll be glad to answer those, but I didn't want to take any more of your time to discuss those.
Okay, if there are some questions, before we get into a discussion amongst ourselves, if there are questions for the staff, let's do those.
Actually, there are some confused-looking people in the hallway. In the hallway.
Dixon, come in for a second.
Okay, so tell them what we did.
We skipped over Spring Valley, and we're coming back to it.
We're coming back to it. We're discussing the Roberson Place connection first.
So you'll be up next. All right. No, you did not. You're fine. We'll call on you. thanks for pointing that out. Okay. So if there are questions for the staff, some initial questions for the staff, let's hear those now, and then let's. I think there are a number of members of the public who wish to speak on this item, and then we'll then we can have maybe a discussion amongst ourselves, if I may suggest it. Jackie, and then John.
Just real quick. What can look short sometimes isn't. What can look shorter, coming out of Rand Road onto that stretch of Greensboro Street, you have people just coming down the hill, so they're going pretty fast, and you have people coming off the highways, and then you have people who are just moving out of a stoplight. So how would we deal with merging traffic, particularly during a busy time of day, on Greensboro Street and Rand Road? It just seems like kind of a dangerous point.
Well, we have talked with the folks at NCDOT and among staff, and there would be a need to look at some additional striping and signage at that connection to make sure that.
And my second question was, like, your first answer, your first line of defense would be education and enforcement. How much time did the police department feel that they could spend enforcing the speed limit there?
I do not know the answer to that question. I don't know if Carolyn is here.
Because it seems like sometimes it's a stretch to find the time to enforce speed limit on the major roads, and we hear that all the time. So I'm wondering how much time would actually. Those are my only questions.
Dale, can you go back to the engineering picture you got there? Plan? The complicated one. My question is regarding where you said that Steph finds under the current conditions there will be difficulties in constructing the sidewalks and the bikeways, which is something I think we all are very interested. I just want to see how do we need to buy additional right of way, because I see this is a major constriction, I love the, by the way, it's a fantastic bikeway, the one we got there. And it really scares me that we're going to mix in a really narrow street, you know, pedestrians, bikes, and cars, if we approve this, if we go ahead with this.
All right,
why, well, is there a way, you know, it makes sense to me that to keep the bicycles, the bike paths completely separate from the road, can we do that?
Not within the current amount of right-of-way that we have.
Can you
the right-of-way line is this line right here, and I believe this line here. So actually, it may be this one a little bit farther to the west, but it is a narrow right-of-way, and at this time, there's not adequate right-of-way to make the types of improvement that you're asking about. When the property is redeveloped, there would be at least a more complete sidewalk system, and we would have an opportunity to look at the bicycle facilities at that time. And we view this as an interim measure to provide the connection that was called for in the CUP.
And the idea is to connect the bike path and the sidewalks all the way to... like the folks who are walking their kids to Frank Foote Graham School.
Right. Well, this this connection, the sidewalk from Purple Leaf Place comes to this point right here, and we believe it would be possible to put a gravel path through this area, and then again we will look at striping and some means of accommodating the pedestrian and bicyclists through this area. But right now, the sidewalk is not going to be part of this facility.
Thank you.
Joel.
Have there been any discussions with the owners of Rogers Trium about what their redevelopment plans are?
Not to my knowledge. I did ask Marty Roop yesterday if he had received any development applications, and he said he had several months ago gotten some inquiries from folks who were, I guess, looking at that property, and that's sort of the extent of any interaction that staff has had.
Can I ask one more question as a follow-up? I'm probably going to make the discussion a little longer because of these questions. Although you indicated that you didn't want to discuss the environmental issues, does staff know generally what those would be? Are they, for example, like the is it considered to be a brown field, or is it?
I'll just go on to that section. Hold on.
Okay. That's what I asked now.
It's, let's see.
Oh, look.
This is sort of the timeline of what occurred. Back in 1980, there was discovery of something. I don't know any more detail than that, really. 85, the state did a preliminary assessment, and then there was some sort of cleanup that occurred, and in 1990 it was inspected again and was moved sort of out of the active projects list into an archived list, and it's classified as a NFRAP, which means no further response action planned. And I mentioned it had been moved to this archived site, and properties that have been moved to this archived site, my understanding is that they are moved there because the EPA does not consider them to be a risk area any longer and wants to try to encourage the redevelopment of those brownfield sites.
And then the state, there's no state involvement.
Well, I think my understanding was it was sort of a joint federal-state program, and there have been people from both the EPA and DENR that have been involved with the site.
Okay. Those are all the questions I had.
Let's see. Yeah, here's a little bit of clarification about what I was saying about the NFRAP site. They're put into a different database to eliminate any possible disincentive to purchase, improve, redevelop, and revitalize those sites.
Can I ask a really quick historical question? I wasn't here when you guys approved this. Maybe one of you can answer it for me.
Only Alex and Jake.
Can you pull the map of Robertson Place? I walked this weekend all over the place. I drove, actually, and walked. And why we never connected Maple Avenue to Robertson Place? I know there's a little hill which tractors and planners know how to level things out or fill things out. Was that one of those connected road battles, or
no?
It's a dead end. It's a cul-de-sac, basically, that seems we promoted there, but is that a reason?
Well, it's not a cul-de-sac. It's a street, and I guess I should. I live on that street now. I did not live on that street in '96. I think the feeling was that the new neighborhood was on scale and in style just so different from that. That's a historic street, and the street is very narrow, and it'd be very hard to widen that street. So there's a pedestrian path connecting them, which is used quite frequently, but not a street.
No bikes either.
Pedestrian path, I think, is right there.
From a technical standpoint as well, just to elaborate on Jackie's point, you know, Maple Avenue is an old historic street which is not designed or constructed to any standard at all, much less town standards. You know,
we have no standards.
You know, it was laid down by...
they let you in.
Who knows? You know, some people associated with the mill, and there was a dirt road for however, and then somebody threw some asphalt on it, mm-hmm. and that's what it is. And so in order for it to... essentially, it just didn't meet any of the criteria for anything. And probably, if it were today, it wouldn't even be accepted as a town street. Right. Even if it were existing, it had been accepted years and years ago before there was any real sort of policy dealing with that matter. So that's just a little bit of the historicals, the technical issues that led to that decision. But I mean, there was a significant amount of discussion about that, mm-hmm. and after that evaluation, it was just determined that really just wasn't a practical solution by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, ultimately, what you'd have to do is you'd have to go back in, pull the whole thing up, and reconstruct it to standards, and nobody was willing to do that.
Moving for bike access.
Okay.
There's pedestrian access. Okay. Dale, if I could, I'm not sure whether you're the best person to answer these questions or not, but just a couple more clarifying questions. So the cost of the road construction project, we got the bids back, and the cost and the low bid was what amount, roughly?
$32,000.
About $32,000. And just to recap, the amount of money that's available from I guess the developer, is that from the original developer, is what?
$28,500.
So pretty much or close to all of the money that would be needed, $3,500 short. If this road were not built, what would happen to the $28,500?
Well, it's been obtained.
It has been obtained for the purpose of constructing that road, so presumably we wouldn't otherwise have it and would return it.
We would have to give it back to Yagi or whoever, one of the developer that paid it.
I believe so.
That's what the city pays.
Right. It's been suggested that we build, the notion has been brought up of like bicycle and pedestrian connection there, rather than a general public street for motor vehicles. Is that something we could still do with the $28,500? I mean, I'm not saying budget wise, but would that be a permissible use of the money?
Well, my understanding from my discussion today was that if we were constructed just for purposes of bicycle access, it would still be constructed in the same fashion. Is that not what I've been? That was what I think Steve told me. So
that's what staff would suggest, that if the board made the decision that it would be a bike and ped facility only, that we would suggest that the bids we just accept or just took we'd use that same design. It would just be called something else, and we would also suggest that there be some provision for emergency access if the board decided to go that route.
Okay.
In which case, I would feel more comfortable about, in other words, if you're constructing, in essence, a street, which is consistent with the condition and the reason why the funds were obtained and put up for bond purposes, then what the board chooses to do with it after it's constructed in terms of exercising its regulatory authority to limit access or terminate access or make it just for bicycle use would be up to the board's discretion. But as long as it's built in the same way, it seems to me, I would certainly take the position that the funds would not need to be returned under those circumstances.
Right. And let me ask one more question. I apologize if deal if you addressed this already and I missed it in your presentation, but assuming that we do understand that the property, that the Tryon property has been for sale for some months now. I think a lot of us have been hearing that it is for sale. Assuming that somebody did come forward with some type of redevelopment application for the Tryon property, what would be the likelihood that that the street design would not change? I understood your comments earlier to be that we would probably, likely we would require bike lane, sidewalk type improvements along the street if there were a redevelopment application. But is it likely, or do we have any sense of how likely it is or is not that the street that's proposed to be built right now would be adequate? Or would that be, ripped out and redone or what?
I would anticipate. I'm not that familiar with the sort of environmental features of this site, so I don't know what features we would be, or whoever would be doing the design would be working around. But the current street layout probably would not be optimal for making good use of the property, so I would suspect they might redesign the street layout. They might want the street to be in a little bit different location in order to utilize the property fuller. But
at some level it would depend on what the application was.
Yeah, it would depend on the development application. Right. And anything we'd say now would be conjecture based on what we think might happen, but a lot would depend on what the specific project might be.
Okay. Yep.
Just to refresh my memory, is there an expiration date on using the money?
There was an expiration date. Roy, maybe you'll help me.
Well, there was a condition that said, okay, once the town obtained the right-of-way easement, that the developer had the opportunity to build the street. If he chose not to build it,
right,
then the money would revert to the town. And that has occurred. Once the right-of-way was obtained, a letter was sent, and they declined to do the construction, so the town now has access to those funds.
Let me mention a different kind of expiration date, and that is the bids that were taken last week are good for 45 days.
Okay.
And after 45 days, the bidders are free to take that offer off the table. We got a very good low bid. It was actually below the engineering estimate, which doesn't always happen. And we had planned to bring that to you all for award on December the 5th because you won't meet again until that 45 days has expired after the December 5th meeting.
And it wasn't from those concrete guys out on I-40, was it?
No.
Okay.
And nor did the engineers that did that design this project. So.
Okay. Thanks for clarification.
Where it says on the CUP condition modification from 2000, right at the end of 16B, it says the letter of credit would expire 5 years from the date of the recording of this minor modification approval.
Yes.
What's the significance of that? Because presumably that has not expired.
I'll just explain that the conditions were fulfilled before the expiration, which is one of the reasons that we condemned the property, was because we were cognizant of the fact that if nothing had happened for the 5 years, then that they would be relieved of that obligation. They'd get their funds back. But, in fact, those conditions were fulfilled. As Dale said, we did acquire the right-of-way necessary to build it. They had the opportunity to build it. They chose not to, and so we have the money now.
Oh, I see. Right. So the condition was obtaining the right. Got it.
Yes.
Thanks.
Okay. Are there any members of the public who are here to speak on this item? Why don't you come up?
Good evening, Mayor Chilton, fellow aldermen members, town staff, and our extensive gallery. I'm a citizen of Carrboro. My name is Gary Cramley. I reside at 303 Sweet Bay Place in the Roberson Place subdivision. Tonight I'm not here representing myself, but I'm representing the Roberson Place subdivision, the Roberson Place Homeowners Association, and 81% of the residents in the area of influence affected by this proposed vehicular connector. I'm speaking for all these residents in the interest of presenting a clear and unified message in the interest of saving time tonight, and also in the interest of hearing from others who might have opposing viewpoints on this connector. I first want to thank each of you for showing the interest you have in us as citizens and in our concerns. You have all read our emails and answered them. You've answered our phone calls, and without exception, you have all visited and walked our neighborhood with our residents and listened to our concerns, and for those reasons, I'm very thankful. I would also be remiss without thanking Dale McKeel, because Dale has been very responsive to our request for information, and he's been very helpful through this whole process, so thank you, Dale. We understand that the town promotes connectivity for all users. As Carrboro citizens, we agree with this philosophy and appreciate it. In urban areas, we feel connectivity needs to be provided for all users, including vehicles, pedestrians, and bicyclists. As an example, the Roberson Place bike path has just been finished and is a wonderful example of a transportation and a recreation corridor that's a benefit for all Carrboro citizens. For us specifically, this bike path provides a direct connection to the neighborhood adjacent to us, the Brewer Lane neighborhood, to the Libby Cotton bike path, and to downtown Chapel Hill. And it promises to provide a permanent southern connection to the Frank Porter Graham Elementary School and beyond. That is, if it's brought through this Rogers Tryon property in the proper way. We feel this bike path is an excellent example of how a well-thought-out and safe transportation corridor can be provided for all citizens. While not official, the unimproved connector that currently exists between Rand Road and Purple Leaf Place is also currently a viable transportation corridor for pedestrians and bicyclists. Pedestrians use this corridor daily today, starting with parents who escort their kids to Frank Porter Graham Elementary. Bicyclists, especially those from Smith Level Road area, also use this connector daily, mainly to avoid the very dangerous bicycle conditions that exist on South Greensboro Street. If vehicles are added into the mix per this current design, we feel this will seriously affect and compromise the safety of bicyclists and pedestrians on this connector that we use today. We feel this would be a step backward, not a step forward, in promoting connectivity for the citizens of Carrboro. In support of this vehicular connector, the town has provided a quote from the land use ordinance. This is that quote. And someone can tell me how to turn this on. Thank you.
On the screen?
Yep, absolutely. Thank you. This states, to the extent practicable, all streets shall be interconnected. Cul-de-sacs shall not be used unless the topography of the land does not allow a design that would make an interconnecting street practicable. But the land use ordinance also states the following. In section 15217, subsection C, subject to the prior subsection, sub-collector, local, and minor residential streets shall connect with all surrounding streets to permit safe, convenient movement of traffic between residential neighborhoods and to facilities access to neighborhoods by emergency and other service vehicles. The connection shall be created in such a way that they do not encourage the use of such streets by substantial through traffic. The Rogers Tryon property is an abandoned industrial site. It is not a residential neighborhood. This property does not support a school. It does not support a government building. It does not support a church. It does not support a retail business. There is nothing worth connecting to at this site right now, at least not yet. The only purpose for making this connection right now is to support vehicular through traffic, because pedestrians and bicycles currently are satisfied by what the unimproved connector is today. This is a map of Roberson Street and the surrounding area. The yellow line designates the likely path a vehicle would take traveling from East Main Street to Highway 54, traveling along South Greensboro Street. If this proposed vehicular connector goes through, the only alternate viable path for someone in that same area is to traverse through Roberson Place, and that's represented by the red line. We're obviously concerned about the new cut-through traffic that this vehicular connector is going to attract to our neighborhood. Roberson Place is an infill development, not a planned development. It was built on a very steep hill, and there is one path through the neighborhood. We can't and shouldn't be compared to neighborhoods built on a grid that are planned, much like the Oak and Poplar neighborhood that was put up previously. Grid neighborhoods benefit by being able to absorb traffic efficiently and effectively by sharing the load among many, many cross streets. That is not the case here. In contrast, in this design, the only viable alternative to South Greensboro Street for that vehicle traveling from East Main is to travel through our neighborhood. In addition, we're very concerned about new commercial developments that are coming in downtown. I might add commercial developments that we think are very good for this community and we're supportive of. One example is 300 East Main Street. There was a picture up earlier. That picture only showed one egress. Right now there are four egresses planned as per the developer of that property, one of which being on Roberson Street, right at the entrance to our neighborhood. My thought is when a person is leaving a parking garage, of which this development is planning 900 parking spaces, they're going to take the egress that is the most convenient. That may, in fact, be Roberson Street. As it is now, Roberson Street backs up traffic. If that happens, as people are leaving the Arts Center and the Cat's Cradle, whether it be day or evening, and those venues tend to attract people at the same time, and people leave at the same time, once Roberson Street backs up, we expect significant through traffic in our neighborhood. The very person that turns left and can move, as opposed to sitting on Roberson Street, we expect everyone will follow. So that's also a concern of ours. 10 years after the Roberson Street conditional use permit was approved, we now find ourselves and the town wanting to build this vehicular connector. Joe Seitz, the Public Works Director, told us in the last TAB meeting that the total estimate for this connector is $60,000 to $80,000 for what we all agree is a temporary solution. This sets a very bad precedent in that the town is now partially responsible for financing a public road. The town has been well served by not doing this in the past, and we don't believe now is a good time for the town to get in the business of building public roads. Rogers Trium is now abandoned. It is likely that the Rogers Trium property will be redeveloped in the near future because it's a large parcel of land in downtown Carrboro and it's quite valuable. When this redevelopment happens, it's the expectation that the town will require this developer to pay for and realign this road to a proper road with curb and gutter and an adjoining bike path at the developer's expense, as it should be. We believe that is the proper time to address the nature of this connector and what it should look like. To summarize, we believe in connectivity. As Carrboro citizens, we value this community, and we believe in the benefits that connectivity brings. We have supported, and we will continue to support, safe and effective means of connectivity for all forms of transportation. As a complicated and town-financed connector, catering to vehicles and encouraging cut-through traffic, this just doesn't seem like good policy. We would much rather the town save the money they haven't spent on this connector and use it on one of the many beneficial projects that are currently slated and yet aren't funded, of which there are many. We ask that you look at this as a temporary solution that is catering to vehicles at the expense of pedestrians and bicycles, and that you don't continue funding this. On behalf of the Robertson Place neighborhood, thank you for inviting us, and thank you for allowing me to address this board. I would be happy to address your questions. However, I know there are some other individuals, especially individuals that may not be part of that 81%, who'd like to be heard tonight. So if you'd like to hear from them first, that would be fine. But I'd look forward to discussion and answering your questions. Thank you.
I have a question.
Okay.
I think that this was in our packet, a letter from you all, but am I recalling correctly that the neighborhood is supportive of a connection that would allow for bike, ped, and emergency vehicle access only?
We are supportive of that.
Okay.
We're also supportive of emergency access and service vehicle access. Once we saw the price of this connector and the temporary nature of this connector, it actually made more sense for us and to recommend waiting until a developer could take care of this. But if the board would like to go through with this connector for pedestrians and bicycles and emergency vehicle access, we would absolutely be supportive of that.
Okay.
Mr. Kremling, did you have it planned that somebody in particular was going to speak after you?
I don't know if anyone's going to speak for me. I am representing the neighborhood. But I do understand that there are people that aren't in the majority, and I absolutely want to give them an opportunity if they're here.
Could we also ask maybe if people could just raise their hands if they're here in support of the position that Gary's put out and are not speaking?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Please don't all feel obligated to speak necessarily, although if you have something on your mind that you would like to share, please do. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this matter at this time?
Actually, one thing that's not clear, and I'd be interested in hearing the clarification. Does the neighbor's position mean that when Trium property is developed and the resources there from Trium to make the connector road as a egress-only vehicular road, that is acceptable, or are you saying that you want this to be emergency ped and bike only for all time?
Please go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. We are absolutely interested in discussing what the nature of that connector would be when there is a redevelopment plan. And if there is a valuable asset such as a residential neighborhood, a retail business, and so forth, we would be supportive of vehicular connectivity in addition to pedestrian and bicycle connectivity. But it really depends on the nature of that redevelopment.
Okay.
And absolutely, we are certainly open to that.
So for people watching at home, his response was that whether the folks would support the connection later on would depend on the nature of the development.
Thank you for that. My name is James Carnahan. I'm a resident of Carver. I live on Oak Street. And I'm a stalwart supporter of the Connector Roads policy. The clarification is interesting. Because it doesn't shut the door altogether. But I think it's really important that, in fact, ultimately the policy be exercised as it was intended. The original vote of the Board of Aldermen for this connector was unanimous. And, in fact, what was planned finally, what was agreed on, was a compromise that it be egress only. And this is a policy that has been well considered, and I appreciate that you all have supported the policy in general in your remarks. I think it's important to apply it consistently, except where it's absolutely clear that it really doesn't make sense. In this case, it's downtown, and in many ways, to me, the kind of permeability that it will bring about is even more important downtown than it is in residential areas. It's clear that this was something that was a condition that was agreed upon for the neighborhood, and as I understand it, it's been posted all along. Everybody has known that there was going to be a connector here, and the town has invested considerable funds in this. And I'd like to get, ultimately, as a citizen, the value of that investment. The one thing I would say is if you do decide to go ahead and implement the connector now, to also go ahead and implement the Phase 2 traffic calming, have the traffic calming, the physical devices be there from day one rather than waiting around and then everybody having to get used to them later on. That's all. Thank you.
Are there other members of the public who would like to speak on this matter? Okay. If not, Dan.
Well, I guess I find the position of the neighborhood very compelling, and I thought it was well put in terms of bringing the stipulation in our own ordinance about connecting residential neighborhoods, that we actually want to connect something to something in this, and also the forward-looking perspective in terms of what's going to be going on Main Street and on Roberson Street and elsewhere downtown that might impact this. And especially, I really am very impressed in terms of what we don't often hear in a, let's call it for lack of another term, a NIMBY-type presentation, a real acknowledgement of the value of the overall town policy and an openness to possible changing conditions in the future. And I'm inclined to want to go along with what they are asking us to do, which is to hold off on this improvement at this time. And it does seem very likely that there will be something coming in on that property in the not-too-distant future that would, in fact, pay for a proper, complete connection if we choose to do one at that time. And lacking that, there's really no urgency in doing this at this time. We've gone however many years this neighborhood has been there. Without it, they all seem, or at least 81% of them, seem happy with the status quo. And so I'm inclined to wait and see what comes up with the Rogers Trium redevelopment down the road, and basically put off any further, any action on this connection until that time.
Alex and, or Jackie and then Alex. Jackie and then Alex.
I just simply want to say I agree with Dan. I've been very impressed with the neighborhood and their willingness to be open to suggestions. The idea of a road running through a vacant industrial site just doesn't feel right at this time, and it does not connect neighborhood to neighborhood. I would just like to respect the neighborhood's wishes. I mean, these are the folks who own the town, the people who live in the houses and pay the taxes. That's who the town is. I'd like to respect their wishes on this.
Alex.
Thanks. I thank Gary and Matt, who showed me around and spoke to me a couple last week, and spent some time together. Like Dan, I very much respect the presentation that's been made and the thoughtfulness that's been given to the position that the neighbors have taken and how they've gone about this. I reach a somewhat different conclusion from Dan. In the staff report, it was mentioned. Let me back up and give a little background. Jackie and I were the two people who were here when the CUP was actually approved.
Same dynamic then.
Way back, yeah, same dynamic then.
We were both voted for it.
I think we've got to tape of that conversation.
Well,
we can just
that,
replay this. We can just replay that, and we won't have to talk anymore. But there was significant discussion about this in arriving at the design for the neighborhood. There was also significant discussion about this issue in arriving at the changes to the land use ordinance, which allowed for the narrower street design. And one of the key elements, as I recall, in saying that, yeah, that was okay, was the provision of a secondary access. There's stuff in the record and a lot that was going on in discussions between engineers, and this is prior to Dale's time as well. I think Kenneth was the transportation planner at that time.
Kenneth Withrow.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was during Kenneth's tenure, so Kenneth would have, from a staff perspective, a better sense of the history of that. But in any case, those were key elements that were all intertwined and interconnected. No pun intended. And what's unfortunate about this discussion and similar discussions is that when the stipulations are placed on the original permit and every effort is made to let everybody know this is the deal coming in, people obviously get used to the way things are when they get there, and it's hard when the reality hits that, yeah, you may end up having to do something different, that you're going to want to make those accommodations. I read in the staff report that while staff certainly recommends that we go ahead with the entire proposal, that staff is not entirely opposed to the idea of putting the infrastructure in place, completing the project as designed, but providing flexible barriers which would allow for emergency vehicular access but preclude regular vehicular access for the time being, as opposed to the bollards that are used, in which emergency vehicles would have to stop and emergency service personnel would have to get out and remove them. Am I accurately representing staff's position on that?
Yes, that would be, a fallback position. Could I make one clarifying point, too, about funding, just to make sure everybody's clear? The town has already spent $25,000 on the right-of-way to do this project, about $10,000 on engineering. The money used to put the asphalt down that we took bids on last week is essentially the developer's money that he put into to escrow with the town, well, or a bond with the town. If the board makes a decision to wait until that property is redeveloped, I think Mike Burrow would agree, we'll have to give that money back. So we're not saving the town of Carrboro any money by that approach. In fact, we will have made a significant investment.
We'll have to return the $28,500.
Correct. Right.
And the money that we've already spent, as you just said, on right-of-way acquisition.
Basically, we get nothing for that amount of investment, and we returned basically the amount it would cost to do the improvements. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Let me just wrap up here with a question for the attorney. And unlike most of these things, I'm not asking a question I know the answer to. I haven't set it up, believe it or not. What would be the liability issues, since we now own that right-of-way? If, for example, cyclists were to use the right-of-way without, or vehicles or anybody, as it's being, as I think folks have pointed out, being used informally, but now that the town owns the right-of-way, what's our liability if somebody, is injured and the thing isn't constructed to any kind of standards at all? Does that increase our exposure?
Well, those questions are always so difficult to answer. They truly are.
Don't know the answer, that's fine.
I think that's probably the best thing for me to say. I couldn't answer it definitively. I mean, I really don't know the answer. There are all kinds of immunities that the town has. There's insurance questions that the town has. My inclination is to think that it would not that we would not be liable, but those liability questions are very difficult to answer in the abstract.
Let's say this: that you would want to put up signage that says, right of way unopened, or no,
right, bust your ass and it's your own ass.
Yeah, no entry or that type of thing. Something certainly you wouldn't want to encourage people to ride their bike through there. Unless it's been improved.
So anyway, what I'm getting at here, and this, this is where the conflict comes in, which is that I'm willing to go to Vegas and put down some serious money on some serious odds that whenever any CUP application comes in for the Rogers Triumph property, that we're going to have this conversation all over again.
Yes.
Unless we do the whole thing now. I'm just telling you from experience. On the other hand, I think there's a reasonable argument to be made that the erection of flexible barriers, which allow for full emergency vehicle access, the construction of the full infrastructure that we need to ensure that can occur, some point, let's say that something really weird happens and people decide that they would prefer a full vehicle access prior to the redevelopment of the Rogers Triumph property, that would be an easy thing to do. That is a scenario that I am willing to entertain, but I think that it is important for any number of reasons, including just basic consistency with our own policy, basic consistency with the conditions of a CUP that we put down earlier, recognition that conditions haven't changed significantly since that time. The only condition that's changed is that the neighborhood is complete and that people have gotten used to it. So, but bearing that in mind, that is what my inclination is at this point.
We've all explored related topic only a week ago. It seems to me there are three options out there. One is to not build any project at the present time. Another is to move forward with the project as it was originally designed, basically take no action, in which case the staff will proceed with accepting a bid and moving forward with the project. And the third possibility is to instruct the staff to move forward but treat it, at least for the time being, as a bicycle and pedestrian connection only with appropriate emergency vehicle access controls or whatever. Those are the three possibilities. It's interesting to me. I'm not sure exactly where to go with this personally because, I think the decision about whether what the nature of the connection between the two neighborhoods or between the neighborhood and whatever development, I think the nature of that connection should depend to some degree on the nature of what the development is. So that, I'm more inclined to get into the nitty-gritty of exactly how to connect them some years down the road when an actual development application is in front of us, and that argument appeals to me. You could either build it as a for the time being as a bike-ped connection, or do nothing at all and still have that option before you at the time of that we hear a development application. Does that you follow what I'm trying to?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but my point being that, and this is what I was getting at with the liability question, but the answer to the liability question notwithstanding, that the informal and the infrastructure isn't there to really support any safe bike and ped movement over the long term. And I think it's reasonable to assume that there a reasonable span of time is going to elapse before any, I mean, face it.
Be years.
If a CU application, if they dropped one out of a helicopter right now and it landed on this desk, it'll be 3 years before anything
right.
appears on the ground.
At least.
So really, boys and girls, we're talking half a decade or more until there's a substantial change in the conditions on the ground after what we do here.
Right.
So that's the kind of timeline we're looking at. And my inclination in having been through these processes any number of times is to place the infrastructure on the ground that is necessary to support the safest possible movement of whatever's happening down there and present future boards with the greatest degree of flexibility to meet changing conditions. Particularly since we've already spent the money on the right of way, and what's left is already what's in the hopper from the from the developers.
Randy.
Well, I just want to add that there's a sense that the connectivity policy is fragile, and I don't feel that way. I think the direction we're moving in, and what I hear folks saying, is in line with my thinking that it is a breathable policy. And I think in this case, from things that the town manager has said and Dale McKillis said about, there is the possibility of having the plan the way it is that will meet the bike and pedestrian and the breakaway barriers for emergency vehicles that can work with the community, with the neighborhood, and the goals of Carbo. So I think that's really important, and I like the direction the conversation's going. I also think it's important that we maybe look at some of the language. And Alex, you were just saying something I thought lent itself towards, rather than having to repeat this a half dozen years from now, if there was something in the language that opened it up, referred back to 15-217 in terms of connectivity to residential, or depending upon what the...
I think the language in the ordinance is what it is, and it's fairly clear, and there's language in there that specifically allows for a degree of flexibility. I know that every time a decision is made that people don't like occasionally, the accusation is made that the policy is inflexible and the board is inflexible. The record doesn't indicate that is true. Mm-hmm. The record indicates that on many instances, the application of the policy has been massaged to meet the the specific needs of the circumstance and specific conditions. A very good example would be the whole Barrington Hills episode. What makes this a little similar and a little different is that what we could hang our hat on with the Barrington Hills episode is similar in many respects to why Maple wasn't connected here. Those streets weren't designed to town standards. It wouldn't work as it was currently configured. Now, so what's a little different about it, what's similar about that to this is that what's on the ground on the Rogers Trium property after our right of after the improvements are done probably doesn't meet those standards either. So in some respects, what we're talking about here is a similar solution to a similar circumstance.
We also don't know what's going in.
Yeah, and we don't know what's going to happen there.
Right.
So, and obviously, when something does happen there, the town's going to require them to build it to standards.
That's right.
When the town requires them to build it to standards, that's when who knows what a board down the line is going to do? They could do anything. But, you know, if I were still sitting here, you know, growing cobwebs, I would say that's when we're going to punch it through.
I just wanted to make a comment on the issue of cost, because it may well be that in terms of direct dollars and cents that there's only $3,500 cost to the town plus whatever staff time has to go into overseeing the completion of that project. But there's a serious environmental cost to laying, I'm not sure what it is, a couple hundred feet of whether it's asphalt or concrete or whatever that substance is, and tearing it up in a few years and disposing of that. And we talk a lot about solid waste reduction, and we're dealing with the question of where our waste is going to go in kind of another context. And I think that's a kind of facet of this that we need to take very seriously when we think about the value of a connection that would only last for a few years or even 6 years, as Alex suggests, unless we feel like we have a very compelling reason to make that connection and that form of connection at this time.
I tend to agree with the a lot of the points made by the neighbors, and also, you know, I mean, we need to go by the book, by what the land use ordinance says, and in a way it does not connect to anything that we wanted to connect today. With the neighborhood, you know, I still believe we should connect a bikeway, you know, between Mapleview and Norfolk. I mean, if we truly believe on connectivity. I would like to support the neighbors' position of, because of their open-mindedness, to allow for emergency vehicle access. And I would like also to encourage the board not to wait for phase one, but to actually go to phase two and have those traffic calming devices in place for the safety of the neighbors, given the fact that there is already, you know, high speed traffic happening, and there is already use of pedestrians and bike users there, even though it's not open yet, it's being used. If we're going to spend, I like the fact that it's not our, well, it is our money. I mean, we're stewards of everybody's money. The fact that we got that money from the developer is the people's money. It's a savings. And we should not return that money. You know, we should use it the best way. I think the fact that it's a small piece and that it connects to a bike path, it should, if we do that, you know, it might continue to be the bike path, and the road could be realigned to be a road to town standards, and that's something that, you know, when gets time to cross that road, we will cross it. But at the same time, I'm ready to support, you know, that connectivity under those conditions that, you know, we give priority to move to the phase two. We don't need to wait for an accident to happen to put traffic calming devices. And it is really steep hill anyway. And I think also to me the biggest liability it is access to emergency vehicle. I mean, I live in Branton Hills and Downing Court, right? I'm a neighbor of the connector road, the infamous connector road. And I have three kids, so I share the concerns of the neighbors. But also I think with everybody I talk, you know, we understand we need to share the pain and the glory that this town offers to all its citizens.
Okay, I'm going to take that as a motion.
The pain and glory motion?
I wanted to ask some clarifying questions.
Oh, well, all right.
Yeah. But I'll let him ask his clarifying question.
So what you're saying, John, is that you will support allowing staff to go ahead, put the infrastructure in the ground, mm-hmm. Install, and basically the only deviation that we're making from doing nothing is to instruct the staff to erect temporary, or not, I won't say temporary, flexible bollards to allow for emergency vehicle access and to allow for ped and bike access. Is that what you're saying?
Would it be striped for bike and ped?
I would assume so. If it's going to be a bike ped connection.
It empties into a parking lot that's full of vacant buildings. But
since I haven't had my turn, yeah.
Okay,
I'm gonna take
Joel,
my turn.
Please.
I have to preface this with I have relationships with three people that live in the neighborhood. One, a good church member of mine. Two, my brother-in-law's mother-in-law.
Oh, good travel.
And my conflict.
And then my brother-in-law's brother-in-law.
So you'll hear about it on Thursday.
One way or the other. So I wanted people to know that. So I'm very familiar with the neighborhood. Went out there Saturday, walked up and down the bike path, and after we dispose of this, I'd like to ask the board to support something else that I wrote down. Clearly, as I told the neighbors when I was with them Saturday, that I support connectivity and have, you know, been a big supporter of that. I have seen my brother-in-law's brother-in-law walking his child through, down that hill, through the street, through that empty space, and on to Frank Porter Grant. So people are using it as a walkway now anyway and as a connector. I'm not going to talk long. I'm not supportive of giving the expectation that there will never be a connection there. I just can't support that by any means. I can support John's motion. It's a motion. I think it should be built to the original design with the emergency vehicle bollards, but I will tell you that on a wider sort of basis about expectations, it's one of the places where you see that sign that says the road may not end here. And I understand people, you know, say, well, maybe you should take the sign down or whatever. And part of the reason why the development was approved because of that egress. And, you know, I think the neighbors make valid arguments, and I'm willing to support the third option, which John suggested, but I'm not willing to support the other option, because when you see something down on a CUP, there is an expectation, because it's on a piece of paper. There's an expectation. And when you fumble with the expectation, I think we have difficulty in the future. For future developments,
that may not be infill, that may be in northern Carrboro or a little bit of west of Carrboro, not too much because of the watershed. But certainly I think we need to abide by what's on what we put down if we vote for it. And, you know, I voted to condemn the property to buy that right-of-way. So that's what I would propose. I think that at a minimum, you need a bike path down there because people are already using it anyway. And I think at a minimum, for emergency vehicles to get where they need to get, they need to be able to get where they need to get. And I don't want my vote, if you know, to signal that that's the only thing that may happen down there. So that's all I have to say.
Okay.
Here's a. Is that a second to John's motion?
It's a second then.
I was just trying to move this along. How about a little amendment here, just for yucks and giggles?
Go ahead.
Goes directly to Joel's point. Well, which actually gets to my original point, which was I think that something Joel was saying is that when we attach conditions to CUPs like this, it's not for yucks and giggles. There's strong reasoning behind it, and these decisions are carefully considered. And I think that's just important to note. However, the expectation issue is an important one. And I would suggest that in addition to the placement of those bollards, that appropriate signage be placed indicating that that this connection is intended to ultimately be a vehicular connection, so that when we have this discussion, or when whoever has this discussion, however many years hence, that folks understand what the conditions were going in. Would you be willing to accept that?
Well, let me suggest. Yeah, I was thinking about something along those lines, Alex. I guess I was thinking of something like that. It would say, you know, temporarily closed to motor vehicles, or something along those lines, so that it leaves the question open-ended as the current sign that's out there does. I came in here kind of thinking that it would probably be better to do nothing on this site and let the $28,000 go back to the Yagi Corporation and simply wait for a later date when some kind of redevelopment happens on that site. So far I'm feeling fairly persuaded by the points that John's making. And I want to clarify and make sure that the seconder understood this too, that John's motion included proceeding with the Phase 2 traffic calming devices in it. Okay, I just want to make sure that that's a part of
it. I understood
clear
that and am in support of that. No, my brother-in-law's mother-in-law.
Shaggy.
I'm definitely going to support that. I'd like to remind people that the original CUP was 10 years ago, and that lots of things have happened both in our planning and in our actual physical environment in the past 10 years. For one thing, if you look at what's happening out in Chatham and what the wonderful ex-Chatham commissioners did on their way out the door, there's going to be a lot more traffic coming down Smith Level, down Greensboro. We didn't foresee that before, like 10 years ago with this. If you had it so that folks could run up and down through Sweet Bay as they were being funneled into Carrboro down 15501 and Smith Level and not going anyway, the traffic conditions have changed. The increase in proposed downtown development has changed. So the pressure on an individual neighborhood has increased. So I think it's fine to 10 years later re-examine what was put in the CUP before things changed. And that's the prerogative of every new board is to examine those things. So I'm gonna support John's. I originally came in like Mark and was gonna favor doing nothing, but I think putting the infrastructure there, if for nothing else, then to have the bike and ped stuff there, which is important.
So who is it exactly that you think you're arguing with here? Didn't I start this conversation by putting on the table the idea that the persuasive argument had been made for the temporary bollards and to use pedestrian, bike, and ped access?
I don't necessarily agree with that it's fine to change CUPs, depending upon if it is a major change. I don't think it's that fine. I mean, I'm just going to, tell people, I consider it to me, and this is not this one, but if we're going to do that, what reliance can anybody depend on the piece of paper and the design of planning when you put a CUP down? And the egress is egress. It's not ingress, and you couldn't put a big sign, do not enter. And I would suggest, if it passes, that we put a sign, do not enter for vehicular thing, because it's narrow. And I've been on the board 9 years. You've been on it almost 25. This changing, it is just my nature. You and I are different. And, people need some consistency. That's all I'm asking for, consistency.
Okay, we don't I'm going to
back Jackie up on this because, all the points she makes apart, this is what I raised my hand to say a few minutes ago. I think the existence of a couple hundred people where 11 years ago there were none is a really significant change of conditions. And the fact is that those people have the lived experience of being in that neighborhood. And when they're coming here and speaking to us, then, as Jackie says, we're very justified in reconsidering or at least thinking about our plan. That said, I support John's. I will support John's proposal. I will support it with the kind of signage that Mark suggested, not with the kind that Alex suggested, because 6 years from now, as you suggested earlier, six or more years, we're going to have even more change conditions. Will those mean, yes, for sure we're going to do a connection there, or will it change our thinking about it? Who knows? But I don't want to lock in an expectation. I'll acknowledge the possibility, which I think is what Mark is suggesting, if that needs to be in the resolution. But other than that, I'm happy to support the and I was particularly swayed by Joel's point about the bicycle and pedestrian safety because of the fact that that route is already being used. And I think that makes a lot of sense in that context. So. I guess I want to ask.
I'm not going to argue about the damn sign. That the language that Mark proposed is fine. Again, I don't know who the hell you think you're arguing with. Once again,
all right.
Quick question to legal counsel.
Just a minute, please, John.
I'm really concerned about that abandoned property there for the safety of everyone. What's our legal recourse to, this graffiti already there? Who knows what happens there late at night? And the more empty the property is, it deteriorates really fast. What is our recourse and liability if something happens there? I mean, can we ask the owner of the property to upgrade it or even help us? He might be more interested in cooperating with the town to improve the bike path and the sidewalks now, the more attractive we make that property, nobody's going to lose money. That's for sure, but it is a public safety hazard, and I would like something, what's our legal recourse to say to the owner, improve the property? I mean, people start breaking in there and doing drugs or whatever. I don't want to see that happening.
Well, there are different recourses depending upon the circumstances that are there. For example, if it were demonstrated that the buildings were being used for illegal purposes, there's one set of remedies that we can take, declaring the property a nuisance and closing it. And if the building is in the kind of shape that would authorize us to take action as being a serious public health or safety hazard, there's a statute that deals with that. We could certainly ask the property owners if they would consider installing infrastructure, meaning the street connections now, as a way of making the property more valuable and acceptable, but there's no way to compel that to be done. So it sort of depends upon the nature of what the concerns are and what the situations are. But there are things that we can do, but just the mere fact that their property is vacant does not give us any remedies or rights.
Okay, but we'll want to keep an eye on the situation. The motion, as I understand
it, question.
Is, yeah, assuming that the proposed sign was a friendly amendment.
Second. The seconder accepts the friendly amendment
okay.
for the signage.
All right, and I assume you don't have a problem with that either as a mover. Okay, so the proposal is to proceed with the building, the connection, install flexible bollards, and proceed with the phase two traffic calming
right.
and erect a sign that says, and I think what I said before was, temporarily closed to motor vehicles.
Right.
I hate to jump in at the last minute, but on the phase two calming, I think that I'm not sure, please correct me if I'm mistaken, but that the request from the residents was for the phase two calming contingent upon the opening. So I think if the folks, bottom line is I don't want to go ahead and put the stuff down on the ground if the folks don't want it under the current conditions.
Mr. Kramling, could you address that question? Come up to the microphone for this part.
They may want them anyway.
Real quick, would you like the phase two or would you prefer?
Yes.
You would. Okay, great. That's all we need to know.
Okay, that's. You know how to handle a public hearing, Gary. Don't mess up now. The motion is on the table. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. Thanks very much. Alderman.
Two things. Because I had an opportunity to walk on the bike path Saturday, I'm concerned actually about, I guess, on the other side of the bridge and the creek area, that sort of hilly area that's got all the kudzu on it. And as I'm looking at the houses that are on Brewer Lane in that neighborhood, I'm worried about the erosion of the bank. And so if the town or somebody could just look at that, if the board would agree to that, that would be helpful.
Finish your second thought.
And my second thought was if we could, and I don't know, I guess animal control would have to do this, and it goes sort of to that nuisance thing. I'm not saying that I saw vermin there when I was out there, but we may want to do a vermin check just to see, because it just has, you know, it's in that kudzu, it's all in that green area, in that hilly area and stuff, and that would just, you know, check to see.
Okay.
Because normally, you know, when you have a development, there are no vermin and stuff.
Okay.
And I was concerned about, because there's so much bicycle and pedestrian traffic to Frank Porta Graham from Brewer Lane and the Sweet Bay neighborhood, I think maybe some of the signage could be more protective between where beyond Rogers Trium to Merritt Mill to Frank Porta Graham, and I had talked with some folks in the community about that maybe we can have them chat with Dale about some signage and some recommendations because they're making the walk. It needs to be more clearly delineated.
Okay, Jackie.
We were also dealing with some landscape issues for the bike path, and that's quite a it's not really pretty right now. It's a pretty bike path, but it's kind of bare looking, and we've had some emails back and forth, I think, somebody was going to...
What is the status?
What's the status of that?
With the Homeowners Association, as I think we previously shared with the board, there were never any plans for the town to do landscaping. There's simply no right-of-way there. We barely were able to fit in the bike path and the bridge, and the bridge design was based on the amount of right-of-way that we had to work in. Paul Helwig, our landscape supervisor in Public Works, is working with somebody in the Homeowners Association. I think it's there.
I mean, it'll probably manage.
Okay.
I work with Paul
okay. So we're...
It's being addressed.
We're working...
It's not being addressed.
Could I finish?
Okay.
My understanding from George Size and Paul Helwig is that they have met with someone with the Homeowners Association and are working on a plan. If there's something different going on, that's new to me, and I assume to you, George.
I'm hearing conflicting things.
Ms. Elward, would you come up if you want to address the board? Come up to the podium. Should we do Spring Valley and then break? Or?
Sure. Hi, my name is Ann Elward. I'm the property manager for Roberson Place also. I'm a resident there as well. Before the bike path was put in, I met with George and Dale McKeel in person and discussed the plans. And I wanted to be really clear about what was going to be up, and they showed me pictures and everything else as well. The concern we have is by the bridge, they took out about 50 trees to have elbow room to move their things around. That was not, we were advised that things would be put back the way they were. Basically, we did not intend to have those 50 trees taken out, and they were actually kind of surprised when I brought it up to them, and we did the walkthrough afterwards when I asked, are you going to put the trees back or give us some allowance money to replant them? They said no. So that's how the conversation ended, that I met with Paul Helwig, but we had to plant them ourselves at our own budget that we did not budget those trees for, at least 50 trees.
How much do you spend on those trees?
We don't have the money to buy them. We didn't expect that we had to buy them. But they're about $75 a piece, is what Paul Helwig has told me.
We may have to plant smaller trees.
Okay, well, we're going to have to – I don't think we're prepared to get to the bottom of this issue right at this time. Mr. Manager, could we have – perhaps we could get Mr. Helwig and Public Works Department to bring us a report on this matter at our December 4th meeting? December 5th meeting, and we can take up this topic at this time because it sounds like it is not entirely resolved anyway. all right.
Thank you.
Very good. Board members, shall we take a...
Why don't we move on to Spring Valley and dispense with that?
Is there
pretty quick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's two people here.
Mr. Manager, could you have a... We have all read your agenda item.
It looks
in
really
great detail.
Forward.
We could have a...
Move the ordinance as...
Well, we got two speakers from the floor.
Okay.
Springvale.
Could we have a very short staff presentation?
Because I think the staff recommendation is not exactly what
it's not exactly.
So
please
there
come
may
forward.
Be an issue. I don't know that. Dale, can you...
Do not have sidewalks.
Very short and sweet. We have a request from Spring Valley neighborhood for traffic calming. The shaded area is the area where the area of influence that was defined. Petition was received in June, signed by 30 of 32 owners or residents. It was evaluated based on the traffic conditions that are listed here. It did not meet the request. Let me back up. Well, let me go forward. The request was to install three-way stops at this intersection and this intersection of Creekview Circle and Waterside Drive. based on the speeds here, we're all lower than the speed limit, but based on staff review, we felt that sight distance at this intersection was good, and with the recorded speeds, that that we did not recommend putting in a three-way stop at this location. However, at this location, based on the level of primarily pedestrian and bicycle activity in this area and the more limited sight distance, we did support a three-way stop at this location. We have to, there's a big book here I brought just to show you. We had to evaluate these things using this book called The Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices, and that's why.
Can we get copies of that for the book?
Yes, it's a very useful book.
I like mine to be electronic. And,
it is available on the web. And because these are signs that are, you know, there's a protocol for a legal protocol for when to and when not to install them based on the criteria that we have to work with. That's why this recommendation was made. So we'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay, recommending one of two, proposed.
What about
the
northern location?
Right, okay, right. And you're not recommending it where?
At the lower or the southern location.
Let me just preface with that. I do live at 107 Creekview Circle, and my husband signed the petition.
Okay.
So.
All right. Okay. I understand there are three people here to speak on this matter. Dixon Phillips, would you come up, please?
I am Dixon Phillips, the president of the Spring Valley Homeowners Association. I've studied the manual on traffic calming, and there are 15 sections I'd like to address. We thank staff for their attention to this petition, and I'm a reluctant canvasser, but regardless of the merit of the cause, but one sleety morning last winter I did get out and go around the neighborhood because both of these intersections I think present some real dangers, primarily to the children. We've got a lot of children in the neighborhood, and they use the streets heavily for play, and both of the intersections, Creekview Circle, you don't have a topography here, but they're both downsloping hills to waterside. And so the threat, is there a, I guess I can't, you know, the danger is these kids, they come down on their bikes and their scooters and their electric cars and, you know, pell-mell.
It's those Dorison kids, isn't it?
The Dorison kids, mainly.
Yeah, it is.
But they bring my kids along. And apparently the same thing happens here. There is more sight distance here than here. I agree that this is the more serious intersection, but this too, I think, is an issue, and it's, you know, these speeds are under the speed limit, but the reality is, if you're going the speed limit on these streets, you're going too fast because they're narrow, and they were built as private streets originally, but I'd be happy to respond. We've got two folks who actually live at this. At the intersection that here, that where they're not recommending the three-way stop, but we got two folks here, Ken Thorne and Laura Case, who'd like to, I think, address the need at that intersection. But again, thanks to Dale for coming out and studying this and his recommendation.
Let me ask you a question.
And the only recommendation is to put a two-way stop sign there at the end.
Right.
And what was your concern about somebody against it?
There's nobody against it.
Not to the ones in the bottom, right?
Sorry.
There's only people, you said some people against it?
No.
No.
Okay. Did anybody against this thing?
No, anybody against it.
All right.
Everybody who was presented with the petition signed it. There was nobody who declined to sign it. The only people who didn't sign were folks that we didn't get fined when we went around.
Okay. Come on up.
Hi. I have laryngitis, so I have to put up with my voice. But I think it's important to be here. I live at 203 Water Side, which is right.
Could you state your name, too?
Laura Case.
Laura Case. All right.
Sorry. I live right here. And I don't have children of my own, but I think it's a very dangerous intersection. And so I would hope that it would be possible to have a stop sign here, too. I mean, I'm not speaking from a selfish standpoint. From my own house, actually, it'll probably be more frustrating. I'll hear cars stopping and starting and all that. I just feel like that pales in comparison with the safety. Because it is a downhill, and I see cars, they stop at this stop sign, and then they begin to accelerate. I think especially if they know they're going around to where the access to the pond is.
Right.
They just go, okay, now I've stopped at the sign, then just whoosh, they're just going to go right through. And I don't see them pausing to look at these intersections. I don't think they're just not noticing these two intersections. So, and I just think it's really dangerous.
All right.
Do you think now that if we put a two-way stop sign there?
Here?
Now, I mean, people will have to start beginning to slow down. Once you know you...
I think so. What I envision is that when they turn this corner, then when they see a stop sign there, they'll know they have to stop, so they won't accelerate and keep going. So I do think that, to me, it's, I mean, I live right there. To me, it seems like it wouldn't stop them from just continuing to accelerate down that hole.
Okay.
I wanted to add that I think having both stop signs is really important. The one thing that this map doesn't show with the topography is right where you live, actually, is it's the way it curves and dips, you really can't see, especially if there are parked cars and if children are running out from your neighbors.
I think so, too.
Because the... one of the ways to get over to the lake is over there. So, yeah, it's. I think both are critical.
Yeah.
Okay. And did you want to speak, sir?
Please.
Thanks, Laura.
I'm Ken Thorne. I live at 100 Waterside Drive in Spring Valley. And... I live right here, so I have a good observation of that intersection all the time. There are probably 5 to 10 children playing on this stretch of road after school and on weekends every day. Joel, I think your youngster is one of them.
Yes, he is.
And this is a downhill towards Waterside, so that as they're playing, the balls get loose and they roll into Waterside Drive. Mm. I'm sure that the... parents have spoken to the kids about looking both ways, but in the excitement of the games, they run into the street. Just last week, I saw a little girl with her dog, and she lost track of the leash right here, and the dog ran into the street, and she followed it. Had there been a car coming around here, she could very well have obtained have been hit. Even though the speed limit here might be 19.65, it's too fast for this stretch, and at this point they've stopped here, they're accelerating, so that by the time they get here, they're probably well over 19 miles an hour, that they come around the bend here and are accelerating at that point. So it's a dangerous intersection for the children. I don't have young children myself. I'm not concerned about my children, but I am very concerned about the children there. It just doesn't seem to make sense to me to say that we're going to protect our children up here, which we should, but we're going to let them get hit down here. It makes no sense. We're not impeding traffic to any other community. The stop signs affect only Spring Valley. It's not a through street to somewhere else, so that it is only our own people in the community, the parents of the children that live here, that are affected by the stop signs. So I ask that you approve both stop signs here for the community.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So you don't mind losing your parking space right there? Do you live in the corner?
I live right here.
So if we put a stop sign there, it means...
It will affect me. I'll hear cars stopping and going. But I'm willing to put up with that for the safety of the children.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Dale, could I ask you to come back up for a minute? Because I have just a quick question for you. Could you restate? So the staff's recommendation for not placing a three-way stop at the southern intersection was because of the standards in the manual, or because of the percentage exceedance of speed limit?
Well, I guess I said two different things, but I said them very quickly and sort of together, and I should have separated them. It doesn't really meet the criteria for traffic calming. Period.
The criteria that we've adopted for ourselves.
The town has adopted.
Okay.
However, there are also criteria for placement of stop signs that are in that big manual that I picked up.
Right.
Based on those criteria and our study of the area, it looked like we were on solid ground to recommend the northern intersection. The southern intersection, it specifically says in that manual, stop signs are not to be used for traffic calming. I think the neighborhood did consider some other use of other devices.
Right. Right.
And there wasn't really support for that. So that's sort of where looking at this area, the side distance to the intersection was good, as I said, and the speeds seemed to be in a reasonable range, and that's where the recommendation came from.
Yeah, I hate to be speaking for my own neighborhood, but I am because, how often will this ever happen again? I would endorse the second stop sign. And one of the reasons is because we have a tremendous amount of bicycle traffic from people coming through our neighborhood and going to Bolin Creek and riding their mountain bikes on the creek. So they're not, they're also coming from Estes, but they're also coming, you see people every morning running down the hill to Spring Valley and running around Waterside and then running down the hill. And I would just ask, that you add the extra stop sign.
Is that a motion?
Yeah, I feel kind of bad making a motion, but,
It's okay. The lawyer says it's okay.
All I got to do is amend the ordinance to say northern and southern intersection.
Right. Then I'll move that.
Second.
Yeah. All right. That motion has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? The matter passes unanimously. Thanks very much. We're going to take a... We're going to take a 5-minute break here, and when we return, we'll pick up the parks and the recreation and parks comprehensive master plan.
Please keep those kids on the beach.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Tuesday, November 21st regular Board of Aldermen meeting. At the beginning of this meeting, we heard from petitioners on matters that were not on the agenda, but unfortunately I missed one person whose name was not on the sheet, so if you'll pardon us for just a moment, please come up to the podium.
Hello. Thanks very much for giving me this opportunity. I'll be very brief given the late time. My name is Sally Gerner. I'm a citizen of Chapel Hill. I live in Colonial Heights. I'm also one of the founders of a group called the Alliance for Community Economics, ACE. And just a few weeks ago, we brought a national speaker and a guy named Michael Schumann, who's the author of this book called The Small Mark Revolution. And I'd like to make you a present of this.
This guy's not a Marxist or anything like that.
Okay, no. What? No, a Marxist.
Really is a Marxist.
No, his name is Michael.
No, in fact, the main idea is that in light of a lot of what's happening in globalization and the sort of eroding of local economic structures, that the best way to get sustainable vitality in both rebuilding communities and economies at the same time is really to kind of build from within, having a lot more to do with grassroots entrepreneurship, microloans, loan circles, those kinds of things. There's a whole raft of new kinds of techniques. And I just found out last night that you were doing a whole comprehensive economic analysis, which, by the way, I've looked it over and looks quite wonderful. Whoever did it for you did a really wonderful job. I'd just like to encourage you to look more towards the build from within kind of approach as opposed to recruit from without as an alternative, which I think there's a fair amount of research now that suggests it's your long-term vitality will do better in that kind of a sense. Besides, after all, Carborough is one of those places that already has a huge creative class that you should be able to develop a lot from that. So that's pretty much all I had to say.
Thanks very much. We're getting ready to plan our retreat for January, and our economic development strategy is going to be one of the key things that we'll be discussing at the retreat. So our retreat planning committee will, I think, take what you're saying and this book into account and planning our discussion.
And if we can be of help getting somebody, Michael or somebody else, down to help talk about these kinds of things, we'd be very pleased.
Okay, that'd be interesting.
Thanks, Sally.
All right, thanks very much.
I think that's a great idea, Mark, for the committee to add that.
We'll check it out.
Small Mark Revolution.
Okay, thanks again. The gentleman from Hayden Stanzi Alley.
Good evening. I thought I had a bigger crowd when I got here. presented.
You had one neighborhood, right?
That's right. Once again, I'm John Wood. I'm with the firm Hayden Stanzi Al, down the road from Charlotte at this time of night. I was scheduled to be here last month, but similar weather conditions kept me from getting past Salisbury last time. This is the way I got all the way here. We presented the comprehensive Parks and Recreation Master Plan to this body here in June.
Yes.
There were some few comments made, and we were asked to come back and sort of present those comments. They have been added to the master plan that was part of your document, and they have also been added to a couple of the maps that were affected here. And I was just going to summarize a few of those items to keep it short. One of the things, we did change the language in the overall document to basically reflect that the plan, both in the map form and in the text form, has a variety of recommendations that the town can explore and pursue if it is in the best interest of the community. And that obviously changes from year to year. All the proposed recommendations may or may not be considered during future CIP. projects and budget processes, and some of the recommendations can also be addressed through collaborative efforts with your neighbors and the county and other agencies so that there's joint use of funding. We were asked to take a look at a document that was done in February by Orange County, in which they inventoried all the facilities in Orange County, which we took a look at. We also added that into the reference materials. And then at the same time, we were asked to add three pieces of trail onto the plan, and those basically affect bring a trail up through the Twin Falls, future Twin Falls Park, up to Eubanks, making some connectivity down here with the high school, from Heritage Hill up to Morgan Creek, and then also a bikeway up Estes Drive to eventually tie into Chapel Hill system. And then probably the biggest thing was to, all the recommendations that are in our plan, was to attach some type of a priority list, more so than a timeline. Staff did not want to get into tying it down to years, per se, as those things do change. But we basically had five categories. We had an immediate needs category, and within that category, we were going to develop a master plan for the Adams Track and review budgets for potential grant opportunities, identify active sport opportunities for youth, especially girls in the 13 to 16 year age, which I believe Joel, yep, was a comment that came from Joel, increase offerings and programming for the Latino populations, as well as adding a member of that community to the Recreation and Parks Commission, make the middle school age teens part of the recreation opportunities and offer more offerings for them, plan and implement a community greenway summit, which already took place at the end of October, and providing all-day summer camps, and then also continuing to explore and implementing joint use opportunities and agreements with Orange County and Chapel Hill. There's a near-term category, which is now taking Martin Luther King Jr. Park, completing those construction documents so that that park can be constructed, and completing at least a detailed design for about 3 to 5 miles of either Bolin and or Morgan Creek greenways. And at that point in time, also try to get the Adams Track in for some type of a grant funding. We have a few long-term needs as we project a little further out. Another 3 to 5 miles of Bolin and or Morgan Creek. At this point, probably preparing to undertake another comprehensive master plan update, which typically gets done every 5-10 years, roughly, and then start to explore actually doing something in the Adams Track. There were two that we put into the ongoing category, and those were to continue to seek land acquisitions for Bolin and Morgan Creek, as well as to maintain current infrastructure and, you know, keep that high appeal for the town and the Recreation and Parks Department. And then there were a few items that were put on a wish list that aren't in any of the categories but could be moved up into them. That was to identify land and locations for a downtown pool location for the summer months and develop a master plan for that. Hopefully go ahead and get that designed and constructed. Develop a master plan for the Morgan Creek Community Center, and then complete a detailed design and construct a community center for Morgan Creek. There were also two proposed parks on the 1994 plan, the Homestead and the Union Grove Church, up in these two areas that we deemed not necessary as a part of this plan, because those will be taken up with other facilities that are improved at this time. And that's primarily what was added to this plan for adoption.
Thanks very much for all the work that that y'all have put into this, and also to our Parks and Recreation staff, I know has spent a lot of time on this subject as well. Are there any questions for the consultant?
Yeah, one of the points from the June 13th meeting was the connection to Eubanks through Twin Creeks Park from Lake Hogan Farms. Can you just point to where that connection is?
That would be this coming up and through here.
Okay. And if people in the Fox Meadow neighborhood to the east of there, are they still connected? Is that the orange?
Actually, on this one, there's still a little connection that comes up through here.
Okay.
And they both end up coming through Twin Creeks.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Randy.
All right. That was one of my questions. But I have two others. And one is that this seems very trivial, but I think it's important. Because I didn't see in the document somewhere where we would look to have at the various parks or trails something that they have in Carbo and folks have come to the board and complained about, which are the doggy litter bags, you know, the containers that provide that. Is that something that that you would recommend? I mean, I don't know where that comes in, but I know that Chapel Hill has it on several of its trails, and folks have come before the board being concerned about, facilities like that have those kinds of not only signage, but that offer the bagging. Is that?
An item like that is fairly simple. The staff can add that in under either the guidelines.
And the second was any discussion of invasives, because I know that the plants, the invasive plants that are out in the Adams Tract, is that something that we would need to put into this document? For example, I know that there are several groups that spend an awful lot of time out in the Adams Tract area and along the Bolin removing invasives. Is that something that would be part of this plan?
I think that probably speaks more to the specific master plans for each. But once again, as this plan is a guide and can be modified from time to time, and it is recommended that it actually get reviewed at least on a two-year basis, but even a year basis to see where things might need to shift.
I would reiterate what John said. I mean, this is at a level higher in planning than getting down to that kind of detail for something like the Adams Tract. That's a part of the management plan for the Adams Tract is dealing with the invasive species.
We'll be probably reviewing at some point upcoming in a year or two our management plan for the Adams Tract.
Okay.
I also just want to say...
you can go. You've already started.
I just want to, in response to we're missing a recycling opportunity of plastic bags. You know, every time folks put in those bags, I've seen them, people take them for other purposes. Every time you go shopping, save those plastic bags and attach them to your leech and work with it. And pick up your stuff.
Yeah.
And that way you recycle and you keep your neighbors happy.
That's why I don't have a dog.
Joel,
get
us out of this area.
Well, now, I will. I won't talk about dogs even though I have one and I do use those plastic things. The one thing that I would encourage the board to think about is, given the comment about gangs in Carver and also, that general discussion of gangs, part of the way you prevent folk from joining a gang is to have a place to go and have some structured ability to engage them. And athletics is a way to engage people. And I would just encourage the board, when they're thinking of the general plan and we look at the budget, that we try to figure out a way that's both cost-effective, that we really think as a whole how we engage our children. Because it seems to me that, there's the YMCA and there's Hargraves, and the Carver does a great job with involving children, but again, I think we want to make sure that we make it so attractive for people from the ages of 11 to 13 to participate, because that's really the turning point. If you get somebody 11 to abide by the rules of society, you don't really have to worry about spending $25,000 a year. down, you know, at Central Prison or Durham Correctional Facility or the Wake Correctional Facility or out at the Hillsborough Facility right off of 86. So I encourage us to think about prevention. Mm-hmm. And that's just a way of, you know, I know we keep statistics, but I guess what would be more helpful is to see, you know, how many waiting lists do we have? How are we really encouraging parents to say, this is a nice, safe place for you to participate? Because everyone who participates in the REC program, that at least my feedback, that, you know, are in the leagues for young people, are very happy with it, both football, basketball, baseball. And so I would just encourage us to think about more outreach. And that's all. And for young women, too, because if you get a young woman to participate in sports, she will not get pregnant. And you know, that's an issue. So I would just, you know, put that on the table as well. That's it.
Okay.
But thank you. It was a great report.
We have a resolution approving this as our master plan. Is there a motion for that resolution?
Yeah.
Second.
Can I say something before we
quick
go?
Trust.
I appreciate the mentioning of, you know, being more inclusive of our members and doing outreach to the growing Latino community. I just wanted to say thank you to the staff for moving on forward with getting the translation equipment, and that's going to be a great tool to help us do that outreach. And thank you to the board for approving that. So we got a – how many sets are those? How many people can
– 20.
20.
20. So – and is people can pick them up, right, or arrange – where do they need to go to pick them up? If they're going to have a meeting, let's say.
Well, it's really it's for town meetings. And we've been talking with Chicle about the possibility of renting that equipment in exchange perhaps for some translation services, and Drew's been working on that. But right now, I mean, it's not available to just anybody who would come in, because
it would have to be a town
sponsored event, okay. Unless you all decide to do something different. We're not established now in a way that we could just check out the equipment to anybody who said, hey, we'd like the equipment.
It had to be sponsored by somebody in the Board of Aldermen, too. Well, yeah, okay. But I appreciate that. I mean, that's a tool that in many of the town gatherings that we did, we missed an opportunity to, you know, get folks to understand what was happening. I appreciate doing that.
I just wanted to thank Anita and her staff and the folks on the commission that worked very hard on the master plan, and Hayden Stancil for your patience. It's a long time coming. It's very well
particularly
done.
Particularly tonight.
Yeah.
okay. Really. All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously. Thanks very much. We're on to item 4, request to set a public hearing, land use ordinance text amendment to revise provisions related to child daycare homes and facilities. Is there a motion for the
so
resolution?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Are there any other matters from the board?
Not from me.
I do.
One, two.
There's a house. I was going to ask you. There is a house next to Autologic, like between, I think it's the Music Love and Autologic, that is falling apart. It's an eyesore. It's a public, I believe. I mean, that drug addicts living there or doing shooting drugs. It is a public safety hazard, and something, whoever owns the house needs to tear it apart or fix it, but it looks horrible.
I know that's one we've looked at. I don't recall the details, John, but I'll look into it. At one time it had white paint on it, I think, but there's not much paint left on the
roof. Right. The roof is caving in and everything looks horrible.
Okay.
Berman.
Steve.
Yes, sir.
In reference to the letter from Senator Kinnaird about the FIT Community Program, is that something that we initiate participation in, do you know, or how does that work?
When I read her letter, I'll have to tell you that, for me personally, that was the first I'd heard about it. So
okay.
I'd be glad to get the details, but I don't know
okay. yeah,
why or what.
I'd be interested in learning more.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay.
I just wanted to report very briefly that the Transportation Advisory Board, you guys have probably been copied on a number of emails about this, but mm-hmm. Transportation Advisory Board has pointed out to us that the Sewell School Road bike lane project, the state has allocated $650,000 in the Transportation Improvement Program for the project, but has recently estimated that the project will cost more like $2 million to build. So it has been suggested that widened shoulder bike facilities be added to Estes Drive extension instead from Sewell School Road coming into Carrboro as far as we can, as far as the right-of-way will allow. And the state has estimated that would be about a $500,000 project. But that in order to make that change, we would need to have Chapel Hill and Carrboro both request that change.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that there's room on our December 5th agenda to consider that matter, and I'm going to be seeking to bring you an agenda item on it.
Okay.
Heidi Perry and I and a resident of Chapel Hill all went and addressed the Chapel Hill Town Council about this matter last night, and they're going to be taking it up on December 4th. So I just wanted to make y'all aware of that.
Righty.
All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Enjoy the...